nature of the slow wave. I assume it's still electromagnetic. It's still going through the same medium.
Well, I remember he called them cyclotron waves. Now, I have no idea what that is. I'm not a plasma type. I was going to the hospital. No, but he called it a cyclotron wave, and he said that they have a very a slow, compared to light, slow velocity of propagation. I don't know if they are electromagnetic or what, but I do know for a fact that in ionized media, all kinds of weird, strange things happen. So I think that could be really the solution to these long delay echoes, because I have read a couple of things where they said that you know, reputable people have noticed them over the years. And as I said, he spoke of them as being cyclotron waves, which I have no idea what that is. Go ahead.
I hate to pull out Wesley's thing about plasmons. Maybe it's a you know, maybe it's charged electrons. Maybe the RF is energizing actual, you know, freeing electrons, and the path of the electrons kind of degrade back into electromagnetic waves. Plasma would explain why they were slow waves, because, you know, electromagnetic waves pretty much come to about the speed of light. I mean, there might be index of refraction type of things causing them to seem slightly slower, but not terribly slower. So that's curious. You know, maybe they're plasma waves of some kind.
Yeah, it's possible. I know that you can do a whole PhD thesis practically on propagation of waves in ionized media like the ionosphere. You could spend your life studying just the various things that happen in ionized media and wave propagation. So it does seem to be a more credible type of source for the long delay echoes, because the amount of time delay they're talking about, sometimes 4, 5, or 6 seconds, would mean that if it's a regular reflection, the object has to be very far away. I mean, a round trip time of 6 seconds, that means it has to be, what, 3 light seconds away, which is further than the moon. So yet these signals are very strong. They reported that these long delay echoes are quite strong. So I think it is something you know, to consider. Okay.
KF2CZ.
Yes, Brian, do you hear us this time?
I'm sorry, I've been having some technical difficulties with this radio, and I believe I resolved it, but I didn't know what was going on. And I apologize.
No problem, Brian. We kind of assumed that there was something wrong with your receiver. I'm glad that you fixed it. If you'd like to stay a while and chat, I'm talking to John right now, but we'll call you again when we're done, okay?
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, I apologize. That's KF2CZ on the side.
Okay, no problem. So, John, I mean, I'm curious now if anyone has at least done some modeling of the ionosphere capability to maintain plasma, waves propagating through the ionosphere for a while and then decaying into RF. I wonder if anyone has either simulated it or done any kind of experiments by simulating the gas pressure and charge of the ionosphere and running some plasma through it to see what it would do.
Oh, I know nothing about that, Roy. I have no idea if any research on that has been done. It sounds like it's you know, there must be somebody out there who is expert in that, I have no idea. The only place I heard this was, let's see, this was years ago when I was at CCNY, I was taking a course. It was a modern physics course. And I remember the instructor. I think he was an adjunct. I don't think he was full time there, but I remember he was a ham radio operator. He was physics 320, or was it? Anyway, he was a ham radio operator, and I remember the subject of long delay echoes came up, and I remember he mentioned that that apparently. These cyclotron waves could be generated, which have a very low velocity of propagation, and that was the source of it. But that's the only thing I've heard. I haven't heard anything like that since. Everything I've seen about long delay echoes, they always talk about being reflected off an object, actually an echo, rather than this slow wave propagation. Go ahead.
Well, it's probably kind of Occam's razor in reverse. It sounds like an echo, and it makes sense that it's an echo, but the dissipation of energy from the distance that the echo would have to travel is a problem. So I think it was a kind of a short Occam's razor that kind of cut the wrong way this time.
Yes, I'm always cutting my face on Occam's razor. Hi.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating topic. I'll do a little Googling to see if there was some, you know, papers back 50 years ago that hopefully got digitized. Trouble with the, you know, old papers, if they weren't historic, they're a lot less likely to be open and available. If they're digitized, they're usually digitized behind a paywall because, you know, people weren't donating money for little known papers, but I'll take a look this week and see if I find anything. It's an interesting subject that kind of deserves a little bit of research. I mean, gosh, people are researching all kinds of semi foolishness. I saw a YouTube the other day with a guy who looked like a very kindly high school physics professor who decided he was going to explain to everything that. Because relativity could interpret a magnetic field as an electric field, there was no such thing as magnetic fields at all. So, I don't know. Sometimes I'm amazed at some people on YouTube.
Oh, yes. That's for sure. There is an interesting article. I remember I saw it one time, and it came under the heading of Magnetic Fields Do No Work. And I think it was in response to some of those, you know, YouTube videos. And this was actually valid. It was showing that the magnetic field in itself doesn't do work. You have to put work into it, such as rotate the magnetic field like in a generator to actually get something out. But it was an interesting response to some of the things on YouTube. But yes, the internet does have a lot of Bravo Sierra on it, that's for sure.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, a lot of people have that problem. They see that magnets are used in generators, and you know they make 2 and 2 come out to be 22. They don't understand that the magnetic field just sort of acts as a transducer to take kinetic energy and turn the kinetic energy into electrical potential energy. And there is a small amount of potential energy in magnets being magnetized, and you know when they give up their magnetism, there's a little bit of waste heat loss. But the overwhelming amount of energy that is created using generators that use motors are not really using the magnetism energy itself. They're using the kinetic energy. And sometimes people can't put those 2 and 2 together to make 4.
Yeah, fine business. Roy, I also have another medical-related question, but I want to yield the time because I think I've hogged it up enough. I think there may be some others out there with ham radio-related questions.
Okay, John, you know, whenever you're so inclined, we always have pauses on the net. Please just speak up, and we'll get to you as soon as I hear you, okay?
Okay, fine, this is...
Okie dokie. Brian, hopefully you hear me. You got any questions or topics for tonight, Brian?
And what is the subject du jour?
We don't have subject du jour. It's a buffet. You can pick anything you want.
What is everybody interested in?
There's the rub. Everyone is probably not interested in the same thing. Some people would like to know the basics. Some people would like to talk about quantum mechanics and general relativity and everything in between. So, you know, unfortunately, you can't make everyone happy. So, you know, like the song Garden Party, you got to make yourself happy.
Okay, I have a little subject. From the East Coast, how could I use my HF radio to get to the Far East?
Unfortunately, you need to link to either a bunch of radios or more likely a repeater with a with an internet access. So you can find yourself a local repeater like our repeater that has IRLP, and with the approval of the repeater control operator, you can key in a repeater in that area of interest. And that will act as a link, and you can talk repeater to repeater.
Yes, of course, but I was speaking HF.
HF, you can't do that. UHF and VHF, you know, unless you kind of you bounce it off of a meteorite or a satellite or the moon. But that requires... back in the day, that required a great deal of skill. We had a few gentlemen who did moon bounce that way. Nowadays, we use Joe Taylor's, low signal algorithms, and you're able to do it a little bit better. But the problem with UHF and VHF is they do not interact with the ionosphere. They don't refract. They don't reflect. They just sail right through it. So UHF and VHF are point-to-point types of transmissions unless there's very special and rare ducting that takes place when there are thermal inversions over bodies of water. So, you know, unless there's something like that, so you might, if you live in California, if there's ducting going on, you might talk to Hawaii using UHF or VHF, but that's pretty much the only thing I can think of, either reflecting from some heavenly body or some ductile weather phenomena.
Oh, no, I can understand that, Rory. What I'm saying is using HF, okay, HF radio, not UHF, not VHF, but using HF radio, what do you need in terms of a little bit of a, let's say, electromechanical formula to go ahead and pump enough wattage to go ahead and have you bounce off the ionosphere and get around the world with just 100 watts.
Okay, you kind of, you said how much power and then you said 100 watts, so you've already determined the power. Frank wanted to say something. Frank is getting through Echo Link, so we're going to be quiet for a couple of seconds and let Frank talk.
Yeah, WB2BXO here. And I'm sure, Roy, you can say the same thing now. That's what I was trying to interject in. And I thought Brian was talking about HF, not VHF, which are very different things. Good explanation about VHF, though, Roy. And Brian, at this point in the sunspot cycle, it is very common to work the Far East on many HF frequencies. You just need a reasonably good wire antenna, quote unquote. My favorite is a dipole. A lot of people like vertical antennas. I've used verticals. I've worked into the over my more than 50 years as a ham. I've worked into the Far East with 100 watts to a dipole or vertical on every band from 40 meters to 10 meters. 80 meters. I've actually worked into on 160. It's not technically the Far East stuff. Anyway. Brian, what sort of antenna do you, with Roy's permission, Roy's control, I wonder what sort of antenna you have or feel you can put up for HF. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, thank you for helping me with that. Yes, this question is related to HF, not VHF nor UHF right now. I was wondering that if I had 100 watts, which I do, okay, without throwing an amp on there, are there any, let's say, watering holes or specific frequencies that they use, let's say, in the Far East that they kind of target in order to go ahead and get that far? I'll even say so much as just getting to Hawaii, for example.
Well, Hawaii isn't exactly the Far East. It's not really considered the Far East. It tends to consider that Oceania, Pacific Islands. So propagation is different than to the Far East when you're talking about Hawaii, which is in the equatorial zone. Is there a particular reason you want to contact the Far East? Do you, what is... You know, 100 watts per dipole is more than enough to work the world, especially at this point in the sunspot cycle, and you can do it on just about every band. Give me the time of day from this part of the world. The time of day is more critical than the frequency. About 5:30 in the evening, you can have fine propagation to the Far East on almost any band. If you have a computer or smartphone, you can look on, what is the term now? We used to call it packet clusters. DX clusters, which will list everyone who's on the air that people are talking to. And then, depending on how your logging program, how you set up, you either go to the frequency, or or click on the frequency, depending on if your computer is attached to the radio or not. If there's propagation, you'll also hear the station. So why don't you elucidate us a little on what your purposes. You're just looking to make contact. Is there some particular interest in the Far East? Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I'm just looking to go ahead and see the capabilities of this rig and the antenna. Hawaii, yes, that's not quite the Far East, true. But I would like to go ahead and get to Japan. I do know some very basic Japanese, and that would be very, very nice. But I'm sure there's a, you know, method to the madness of getting there. Certainly time of day is important, but are there particular frequencies that I could isolate to go ahead and enhance my chances?
You can have to comment.
Say again?
Hey, did you have to be with a comment?
Yes, feel free, comment.
Yeah, sorry for breaking in there. I wouldn't specifically look out for a specific frequency. Of course, you want to keep in mind your which mode you're using. For example, if you're going to try and do voice, make sure you're using the correct upper or lower sideband based on the band. But really, the best way to go about this is to spin the dial, whoever you hear calling C2, you search and pounce on them and call them back. DX clusters are a good way to see, you know, what sort of activity is going around in the world. Another thing to, you know, keep in mind is some countries and ITU regions have not exactly the same band plan as the U.S. So, for example, some countries, the top end or the bottom end of a band might be cut off for them, restricted in some way, whereas we might have access to it and vice versa. So, for example, if you were interested in hitting Japan, you could search, you know, Japanese amateur band band plan compared to the U.S. band plan and see, you know, where you want to stick around to do voice or phone or data, etc. Hope that helps. KAV talk to me.
AC2GS, thanks. Yeah, I mean, if you're interested in Asia, Japan is a great place to kind of focus a little bit extra on. It has about 380,000 licensed amateur radio operators these days, last time I checked. So, you know, do a little Googling, find out what their band plan is. Go to DX clusters. If you see that there are Japanese signals being reported, that's a time to heat up the old transceiver, and if you have a Yagi that's directional, pointed towards Japan, and see what you can get. There's no guarantee. There's no kind of it. No one's going to give you a time and a place and a frequency where you've got a 50-50 chance of contacting Japan. But, you know, if you're well-motivated and you try enough, eventually all things come to those who keep on trying.
Well, I certainly want to thank everyone. I really appreciate the comments and you've given me some food for thought. Let me go ahead and just ask one more question. Is that okay?
KD2FIU, some help?
Yeah, sure, George.
Okay, the bands are open. We know that. We've been talking about that. It's all about the antenna right now. And the power. So if you, I found that my best success with working Japan these days is over the top of the North Pole with dipole that is broadside north and south. I can work into Hawaii in the evening hours on 10, 15, 20 meters. 40 and 80 meters, no, more local. That is more local of 48 states. 10, 15, and 20 meters with the vertical, I will work as far as Hawaii. And sometimes on 10 meters with the vertical into Australia and New Zealand. But if I want to work into Japan, it's not a specific time of day. It's when they are operating that I've found. And I found that my mostly horizontal antenna, that 10, 15, 20 meter mostly horizontal antenna, broadside north and south, will poke right into Japan in the evening hours. KD2FIU. Over to you, Brian. I know we've talked with you. ZZ. ZZ, I know you.
Hey, C2PO.
Say again?
Alpha Charlie 2, Papa Lima.
Yes, Jeff?
Oh, can I get a comment from the guy I was talking with, the KF2? ZZ?
Okay, Jeff, hold on for a second. Brian, you want to respond to George?
Absolutely, George. How are you doing?
Yeah, so what I've found is that my horizontal tri-band, which is poking north and south, I work Japan in the evening hours because I'm poking over the North Pole.
makes total sense. I can understand that, and I can understand now some of the comments that were made by a few other people here that, you know, would help me. I do have one other question. Is that okay, Roy?
I think Jeff wanted to comment on the same subject, so hold off for a couple of minutes. And so basically, George is telling you he likes to go long paths to get to Japan. Jeff, what did you want to say?
82FIU. Roy, it's not long path. It's a shorter path.
82PL.
Yes, Jeff?
All I'm saying is that it is all the antenna. It is more than just the antenna, though. I've had a dipole pointed north and south for 10 years, and I've heard Japan exactly never. It has to do with your local noise floor. And you can pick up stations. You know, I can hit stations in Europe easily. I can hit stations in Russia, occasional stations here and there. But I've never heard, I've heard Australia exactly once, and that was during the last peak, and I haven't heard Japan. I haven't really been digging around looking for it, but the point is, the noise floor here on 20, which is where you're going to get out long distance on DX, typically, maybe 17, it depends a lot more on what you can hear as opposed to what another station can hear, unless you're putting up a 300-foot tower with a, you know, a Yagi on it. AC2PL, back to that.
Okay, Jeff, but, you know, I mean, don't put 10 meters down, especially during the sunspot maximum. You know, I've talked more than a few times to Namibia. I consider that a bit far away.
Yeah, Roger, I can hit the Canary Coast or Canary Islands easily on 20, and I don't work 10 very much, but yeah, I absolutely 100% agree.
Okay, very good. Brian, you wanted to ask another question?
Definitely some good comments there. Thank you so much. I see it's an interplay of variables, so I understand that. No problem. And, you know, just have to get lucky and also have the equipment and antennas to go ahead and do it. My other question was actually a little more interesting. What I wanted to know, I understand there are reverse beacons out there. That, for example, from what I understand, if I'm transmitting, are these reverse beacons kind of like pick it up and they keep like a little transmitting record or something like that? I don't know if I'm really, if I'm really saying this correctly, but I understand that you could kind of like check on these beacons and see if your signal has been received.
Yeah, the Joe Taylor has something called Whisper. You know, if you just look up Joe Taylor, where it's actually a program that plugs into your radio and it sends signals. And then you could go to a website where they collect reception of it, and you can see how far it's gone, what the relative strengths look like, and get a vague idea. But those are always subject to change. So, you know, you can't learn something that you could use next week. But, yeah, they have that. Look it up, Whisper. It's not spelled W-H-I-S-P-E-R. I think he leaves a vowel or two out.
Yeah, I've heard of this program before, but I wasn't exactly 100% sure that it was used for that. So, basically, it runs on your computer. Now, so basically, when you transmit, how does it actually? Do you have to run it? Is there a link between your rig and the computer that's running it?
Yes, it sends a digitally modulated signal so that receivers hooked up to computers can detect your signal and then send it to the web server. So it correlates all the data on the computer. There are DX clusters that take actual human beings reporting contacts or reporting hearing conversations and traffic, and they enter it into a computer terminal, and they get it that way. This kind of automates the process more, where you don't have to do anything mechanical. You just plug everything into each other. The audio input and output, and the push to talk controls through a computer control, and it does it all by itself. And you just look at the web page populate with information.
Very good. I really appreciate this information, everyone. And, Roy, thank you very much. And I shall look into this tomorrow morning, actually. And I just want to see, with my current configuration, how far I could actually go, generally. But a lot of it has to do with the directionality of the antenna, too. And, by the way, just as another person had commented, going from New York, let's say, to Japan, the short path is over the North Pole. You want to go ahead and take the polar route when you're going to Japan. It's much shorter.
KD2FIU, Roy, can I come back?
Certainly, George.
Okay, thank you. And you also got to consider when they're most active and when their sunspot cycle is not cycle, but when their gray line is affecting them, because they will be more active as radio operators when their east-west gray line is working. Although, if you're working over the pole, the east-west gray line is not affected. Effective if you're working over the pole, let's say into Tokyo. That's okay, but when are they more interested in working their east-west gray line? And then you'll find more operators on the air over there. And by the way, I work 100 to 200 watts. That is it. I work old radios and very simple. I have a vertical, tri-band vertical, and I have a tri-band horizontal. And they're mostly antennas. But I got stuck with putting my horizontal. It's actually focusing east and west, but the broad side of it is north and south. So I get a tremendous amount of South America, and I do work. I'm able to work over the pole into the Far East. So, Brian, KS2ZZ, KD2FIU.
Another thing, Brian, is check out to see if there are any Japanese contests, scheduled in the coming months. Because then you'll have more people. They might not be interested in talking to you, depending upon what the nature of the contest is, but you'll have more Japanese hams on the air to attempt to make contact.
All very, very excellent ideas. Thank you so much, all of you. I really appreciate that. One other factor, 6 months out of the year, you have darkness at the pole, and 6 months out of the year, you're in daylight. And I wonder if that has to affect the methodology of transmission.
I would assume so.
Yeah,
Brian, hold off for a second. Frank, again, he's going through Echolink, so he's at a disadvantage. So let's all be quiet for a couple of seconds and let Frank have a chance to key in.
Yeah, Brian, what bands and modes do you have access to? And I think we can give you a better explanation of the best times and frequencies to try. Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, I could go from 80 meters to 10.
Okay, and what modes do you want? Sideband, CW, FT8, etc. What mode do you use?
Easting the mast.
Sideband, upper or lower, depending on frequency.
Do you mind describing your antenna setup?
I have a NFED half-wave antenna, which is in an L shape, approximately 130 feet. I'm using a auto tuner to achieve, and actually on some frequencies I don't even need to use it because my SWR is like 1-to-1. But I'm using basically a a wire antenna, and it does get me out pretty well.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to make sure I can be heard here. Brian, if what you're interested in is working Japan, in theory, I've actually worked Japan on sideband on every band down to 40 meters. 80 meters, I think I've heard them around sunset our time, but I have yet to make a contact. You can work them with a 100 watts of dipole. It takes a little experience to do it on 40 meters and below. On 15 and 10, around our sunset, which is shortly after their sunrise, at this point in the sunspot cycle, you tour across the band. You may find them all over the place, even without looking at the packet cluster to see who's on. The next big sideband contest to 10 meters where you would have a good chance of working some Japanese stations would be the 10-meter contest. I forget what weekend is. It's in December to get on a bit before sunset our time. And, of course, in the morning, you get on in the morning, you'll work a whole lot of Europeans in all likelihood. If you just want to see what you can do, you'll be shocked at how easy it is to work Europe, I think. And that's any morning, not only during a contest. I would not worry too much about the directivity of a single element antenna. There is some directivity, but it's not a great amount of gain, at least in my opinion. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, actually, I did some modeling on the antenna using EasyNeck. And I was actually able to visualize the lobes of the radiation. So it kind of puts me in this kind of configuration, believe it or not, in more or less of an omnidirectional pattern.
Yeah, that's really good. I wouldn't worry too much about the... It sounds like you know what you're doing when it comes to an antenna. So... just get on. You'll be surprised, despite this sunspot cycle, how much you can work, Brian. You get on in the if you're able to get on in the morning, and depending on your work schedule, you'll be surprised how many Europeans you can work, especially in a contest. You get on after 4:30 in the afternoon. You should have no trouble working into the Pacific. Working into the Pacific and working into Africa is a bit of a special case because it's transitatorial propagation, which works a little better. And yes, by the way, it does make a difference for the dark over the North Pole. So bands like 40 and 80 meters work better for those paths. And when we get into December, it may actually, the propagation is going to be a long way. Look at a map, you'll see the propagation is going to be a little further south, and the path to the far east is actually going to be a bit longer. But anyway, at this point in the sunspot cycle, it's still going to be workable, even though you're not going to get the true polar path on a daytime band like 10 meters to the far east, over the North Pole anyway, at this time of year. Does that help, Brian?
Oh, yes, definitely. You've given me some really good ideas. Everyone has tonight, and I really appreciate that. And maybe I'll start putting it to good use, tomorrow morning and, get something set up here and try, when the U.S. goes to bed, that's what it is.
Hey, did you have to be? Let me see if I have it.
Okay, KD2FIU.
One at a time, gentlemen. There was the gentleman before George?
I might have been me. Can you talk to me?
Yes, indeed.
I think all the other stations pretty much hit everything on the head. Really, the best way to gain experience is to go out and do the thing, right? I started doing, you know, HF stuff early on, and I didn't really have an in-person Elmer. I found that, you know, going online, I started out on Reddit. There's a decent amateur radio community on Reddit. I found some great people that way who, you know, not only Elmered me, but there were also, you know, Japanese stations who I could schedule with. That might be a great way to try and do a directed sort of QSO. But really, you know, with the proliferation of all the digimodes, nowadays you're really much, pretty much better off just firing off a test call on whatever mode, not just Whisper, but, you know, you can do it on J265, FTA, and, you know, PSK Reporter or any of the other spotted websites will, you know, draw your station and pop out, you know, all the stations that heard you, because there's tons of amateur stations that are just running radios for the purpose of, you know, receiving and decoding and uploading all those stations that they can hear. So that's usually a great way to just see how your station is making out without having to bother people if you don't feel like it. But yeah, so the, you know, the Elmer thing, the just, you know, testing with Digi reverse beacons and PSK reporting. I think I'll also finish out by adding that the winter is probably the best time for this because, you know, given that the nights are longer for both the U.S., for New York and Japan, since it's on the same horizontal line, one station mentioned gray line. I'm not so sure if they explained that it's, you know, during the sunrise and sunset is the best time for stations to make contact with each other. So frequently you'll have an amateur station just running in the morning and evening. That's a great time to operate. And so the longer nights means both New York and Japan get covered. So you'll probably get, you know, long path hit that way as opposed to the summer months. But yeah, with that said, definitely try and go out and see if you can't get any homers to help you out. That's usually the best way to go. And I hope all that helps. KDJ after me.
Most certainly does. Thank you so much. I will get some assistance in doing that. Now, I could also use Wires X and go ahead and act as a cheat and speak with Japan. I've done that already. But I want to do it, you know, via RF on HF. So I'm going to go ahead and try that. One other thing, and then I'll go ahead and just break here for a moment. I'm just curious, into the, if you look at all your HF frequencies, how much worse is the noise floor between, let's say, 1970 so and 2024? Is it severely degraded in terms of increased noise floor, or is it like a little bit more congested than it was?
Brian, are you asking anyone in particular that question?
It's up for grabs.
Okay. I wasn't operating back in the 70s. I think it's more of a case of where you're located. If you were living, say, in Detroit, it probably would have been worse before Detroit kind of you know, got dysfunctional, and now it's coming back online. So, you know, depending upon how much electrical equipment is in your area, determines a good part of the background noise in your station. Anyone else want to comment? Feel free. George, you wanted to say something. I don't want to miss you.
I'm in Alaska.
Say again? someone said something about OUC in Alaska. Unfortunately, I was talking while you were talking. I guess not. George, did you want to say something?
BB2BX.
Yes, Frank?
The answer to Brian's question, I think it was Brian's question, is that in general, I think it's almost a worldwide problem, is the amount of electronic noise has gone up to the point where in a lot of locations it's nearly impossible to hear anything on HF. Between computer servers and pool pumps and all kinds of other stuff in my condo, I tried a couple of years ago, I put a receiver on and couple of different receivers on and could hardly hear a darn thing. It was just too much electrical noise. I was active in the 70s in Brooklyn. I was active, my dad and I had a station in Canarsie, Roy, and we had an extremely high noise level. I still work close to 200 countries, but it was really frustrating sometimes. My noise level was probably close to F9. And I imagine that if I still had that station, my noise level would probably be intolerable at this point with all the electronics running, generating RF. And I think the situation in the Far East and other parts of the world where there's fewer regulations on unintended RF emitters, I think the situation is probably even worse than here. Roy, you're net control. Why don't you pick it up? WB2BX.
Yeah, the problem, though, is external RF noise is kind of heterogeneous. It's worse in some places. It's better in others. And over time, it shifts a little bit depending upon how much the population grows or shrinks. There are areas where population turned, there was a couple of big companies that employed most people. They went out of business, and it's basically a ghost town. I would assume if you were located there, you would see the background noise level to be decreasing. Overall, in the entire world, I'm sure the electromagnetic pollution is much, much higher these days than it was back in the 70s. But, there are lovely places out of town where the noise level drops precipitously.
DDH with a noise comment. KD2FRIU returning.
Okay, George first, because you called out earlier, and then we'll take John. So first you, George.
Yeah, to help Brian over there, KF2ZZ, going over the poll right now, I mean, of course, physically is shorter to the Far East. I don't mean right now, I mean all the time. But if you set up a dipole on whatever band you want to work and focus it north and maybe a little bit by northwest, and just a slight north by northwest, you're going to work your way into Japan with 100 watts. I don't work with amplifiers, 1 to 200 watts, as I mentioned before. Another thing is noise is relative to where you live. Do you live in a city? Do you live in the suburbs? Do you live near anything that is generating noise? A lot of newer radios have incredible noise reduction, but also at the same time, it will exhibit a lack of picking up the sensitivity of signals. So you got a lot of trade-offs over here. Back to you, Roy, KD2FIU.
Okay, good point, George. All. Say again?
KD2PhD comments.
Okay, first, John, then we'll do you, Jim, okay? John?
Just a general comment about the noise. Yes, the noise level has definitely gone up. I used to work back in the mid to late 60s. noise level has definitely gone up. A lot of it is due to these modern TVs, a lot of these flat screen TVs, these LED display TVs, where you have constant currents that are being switched on and off to light up the little diodes there on the screen. They radiate at multiples of the scan frequency. But there's a lot of other noise sources around. As a case in point, I remember back in the 60s on my listening on very low frequency, I had a huge monster receiver called the RBA-5, which tuned down to 15 kilohertz. And I remember I was able to hear a lot of stuff down there on very low frequency. Now at those low frequencies, very low frequencies, it's almost solid noise from a lot of these flat screen TVs. Also, a lot of these solar photovoltaic systems, the inverters, do generate a lot of noise. But so in general, yes, the noise level has gone way up. Go ahead.
AC2DS. Yeah, those inverters have always been a pain in the backside. The wool warts were a big pain in the backside. And if you think the LED TVs, I think plasma TVs put out even more noise than modern LCDs. I never really tested the two. I have a plasma TV somewhere in the house that I rarely use, but I'm sure those cranked out a lot of RF waves.
KE2FIU?
Yes, George?
It also depends upon what type of power supplies we're running our radios with. The power supplies that are used and have been used, and we can call, okay, they've gotten cleaner, electronic power supplies versus analog power supplies. They've changed over the years. They've gotten cleaner, but they still pick up harmonics from other electronic equipment in our homes. Keep in mind, an analog power supply is truly switching at what? 60 hertz. That's a true switching analog power supply. Power supplies switch between maybe 18 to 30,000 hertz. Picks up a lot of what is going on with most of the equipment around us, even the best of them. And we're feeding that to power the radio. You also got to keep that in mind. KD2FIU.
Okay. A lot of us use switching power supplies. They like their switching power supplies. But, you know, there's a market for linear power supplies, so you can choose your poison. Jim, you wanted to say something?
Thank you. KD2BHD, Jim at Bayport. A couple of thoughts on, it's not my specialty by any means, as long as long distance DX. But on the topic of getting to the Far East, there is a gentleman, an operator from Tokyo, Japan, that actually appears on this repeater fairly often. And he might be able to give you some insight from the other side of the QSO to kind of help you direct where you're sending your signal. So there's that. Secondarily, it seems like using an azimuthal map apparently is very important for your directionality of where you put point in your antenna. Because sometimes it's quite a bit different than what you should be pointing at. I'm sure somebody with more knowledge can add to that. This is not my specialty. Those two things came to mind. Back to that.
Okay, very good, Jim. Yes, Brian?
No, many, many great comments here. Great information. Thank you all so much. I really appreciate it. I did an experiment about 3 months ago. I shut off the circuit breaker, main circuit breakers to my home. And I had a couple of uninterruptible power supplies. And I connected them to the rig and all the other equipment that I'm using. And it was very interesting to see that the noise floor was probably about, oh, I would say 2-3 dB lower overall across the bands than when it when the electric was on via the circuit breaker panel.
Okay, that's a good experiment. If you're in a mind to do it, you should kind of knock off different circuit breakers and maybe localize it. If you're lucky, it's a few components that are producing most of the background noise. If you're not lucky, each circuit is spewing a little bit, and it all adds up in the end. But, you know, you might go circuit breaker to circuit breaker and check the background noise level and get an idea if there's one circuit that's really worse than them all, and then you could hunt down the things that feed that circuit, and you might be able to filter it somehow or replace it with a better model.
Oh, you know, that's certainly a good idea. I've had that in mind, too, segmenting them out, like a couple of banks here and there. But, you know, it's a process. It's a process and takes a while to do. But, no, nevertheless, some good ideas. And thank you very much, Roy, and everyone else for your comments. I appreciate it. And this is KF2ZZ. I'll be listening.
AC2GS, very good, Brian. Always a pleasure. I thank you for participating. Thanks to all the people that had good ideas to share. That's what this net is all about. It's supposed to be a kind of group thing. No one guy is doing it all. One guy is kind of orchestrating it, but because too many voices talking at the same time isn't a good thing. But congratulations for all of you of showing what the TechNet is capable of doing. Anyone with any closing comments before we move on?
73 Roy, KD2FIU.
73 George, always a pleasure.
73 George.
Okie doke, once again, I'm AC2GS. We have a little bit more time on the clock. If anyone has any question or comment or topic for discussion tonight that they thought up in the last hour or two, hit that push to talk and tell us who you are.
WA2VDH with a quick medical related question.
Certainly, John.
Yeah, question is about glutathione. I take an additive, a supplement called ImmunoCal. It's a whey protein isolate, whey like in milk, a whey protein isolate, and it's supposedly supposed to boost your glutathione levels to increase strengthen your immune system. They say that you can't take glutathione directly because your body breaks it down. You have to give it the precursors and let your body make it. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about it, what it does, or again, is this ImmunoCal a lot of Bravo Sierra? So I was wondering if you could, a couple of comments on it.
Well, yeah, that's the big question that I have. They also do sell that as injectables that gets by your GI tract, so it doesn't get a lot of these oral food additives, if you will, tend to get digested into nothingness and get absorbed as their elementary particles, you know, that kind of get broken up into just recycled goods. So they do have injectable. I do not know if anyone has done any kind of study on using precursors to get through the GI tract. The problem with all these food additive things is there's either no research done because the pharmaceutical companies aren't going to make any money. This is a different branch of pharmaceuticals that are unregulated, or the research is done and paid for by the companies that are kind of dubious. So you can never really trust them. So as far as I'm aware, there's no actual studies published, but even if there were studies published, if they came from companies that make a lot of money selling the stuff, I would have my doubts. You know, if it doesn't cost you too much, just consider it a kind of insurance, you know, as long as it does no harm. You know, I mean, a long time ago I told a story that, you know, I take multivitamins, not because I think that